Sunday Morning's Thoroughbred Magazine. For the next hour, we're talking horses. Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Talking Horses. Melbourne Cup Week is over for another year, and what a week of racing it has been. On this week's show, we reflect. First, we catch up with Andrew Hoy, the ambassador for the Racing Victoria Off the Track program. And Sebastian Hutch from Coolmore Stud will also join us on Talking Horses this morning. A red letter day it was for the stud on Derby Day, and their remarkable success continued right throughout the week. We'll also celebrate some of the biggest wins of the final day at Flemington. Welcome to the program.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Welcome back. What a week on the track it's been for Coolmore Stud Stallions. Fastnet Rock with a Group 1 double on Saturday, Derby Day. Piero getting his first stakes winner in the Carbine Club and then backing that up with the Oaks winner in Pinot. Joining us from Coolmore this morning, Sebastian Hutch. Sebastian, what a week it's been for your stallions.
Good morning, Joe. Yeah, it's been amazing. Saturday was the sort of day that you really only dream of for people who were involved in the stallion game. There were nine group races on the card, and six of them were by Coolmore-owned stallions. And obviously, Lavendi was very important for Piero. He's his first group winning colt. The Group 1 double for Fastnet Rock was fantastic. Merchant Navy, he's obviously a very, very high-class horse, and it was a fantastic spectacle. And then, of course, to top it off, winning the Derby with Ace High by High Chaparral, it was a fantastic result as well. So, look, it's been a great week, and credit to the stallions and credit to the patrons who've been good enough to support them.
Well, let's go back to the Oaks, firstly, and this is such a significant moment for the stallion Piero, with Pino getting up for the Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott team.
She's a very good filly, Gay, and Adrian have long said that Gay declared her as the Oaks winner some time ago. And look, obviously Gay is famously optimistic about these kind of things, but she's pulled the right rein again. It looked a strong race on paper beforehand, and you know, obviously Aloisia was going to be a hard filly to beat, but the further they went, the better Pino looked yesterday, and it's very hard not to see her being capable of finding further improvement again in the autumn, given she's a 4th of November foal. It's a family that's synonymous with Coolmore because her dam, Dizelle and Grand Dam, were both bred at Coolmore and both won Group 1, so she's a 3rd generation Group 1 winner bred on the farm. It's great for Keith Biggs, Johnny Jones and Rod Russell, who bred her. They have a half-sister by Fastnet Rock to offer at Easter next year. Mm. And obviously for Fastnet, or for Piero, it's a very significant moment. It's his first Group 1 winner, and we hope it'll be the first of many, really.
Mm. And looking back, this filly was a fairly reasonable purchase at the Inglis Easter sale by comparison to what they normally fetch there. They paid $200,000 for her, and that was for the US syndicator Aaron Wellman's Eclipse Thoroughbreds. And she also runs for a partnership that includes Newgate Farm, James Bester and Kate Waterhouse.
Yeah, look, it's a powerful ownership group. James Bester was very fond of her at the sales as a yearling. He knows the family very well. He's had a lot to do with the management of Keith Biggs' stock over the years and retained it, or took an interest in the filly. It's great, particularly for a guy like Aaron Wellman. It's his first experience of racing in Australia, and to have, you know, to have a winner of any sort is usually pretty significant, but to have a classic winner at Flemington must have been hugely rewarding for him, and hopefully it'll encourage like-minded people from that part of the world to consider participating in down here. And okay, I mean, it's a significant result in so many ways. She's the 50th Group 1 winning graduate of Coolmore Australia since 1995-96, when the farm was established as Coolmore Australia. So, like, it's a staggering run of success when you consider in the last few months alone, you're looking at horses like Winx, Mighty Boss, Tulip, Formality—they're all off the farm. So it's really been a fantastic run of success.
And the name Pinot, interesting to read how that all came about. Greg Colavos, who owns Piero, named Piero after his favourite jock, Piero, and that had the link to the wine reference.
Yeah, well, look, it made sense, and it's worked out a lucky charm because, you know, Piero is obviously a fantastically lucky racehorse for Greg and Donna Colavos, and Greg, to his credit, Greg and Donna, to their credit, are still very invested in the horse, take great interest in his progress as a stallion, and Greg has been a very strong supporter of the horse with his own breeding stock. And, you know, to see their faith in the horse vindicated with Pino's win yesterday is very fulfilling for them and everybody involved in the horse and everybody at Coolmore. And probably what's most exciting about it is there's just such abundant promise for what's to come going forward. You know, Lavendi naturally looks a high-class horse, as does Tulip, but there's an abundance of prospects out of there that look very, very talented indeed. And naturally, when you're dealing with the offspring of a stallion, or the first crop offspring of a stallion, it is something of a learning curve. And as it's transpired, the progeny of Piero just seem to be getting better and better with time, probably as befits his pedigree in many respects. But we're very hopeful that this is just the tip of the iceberg with this stallion. He's now crossed the Dane Hill, so it's always going to be very important to us. And we think there's every possibility that when we reappraise the horse on the 1st of April or 1st of May next year, that we might be looking at something very special indeed.
And Fastnet Rock, going back to Derby Day at Flemington, producing a Group 1 double. The first leg of that was with Merchant Navy, the star colt. That's a full brother to Jolie Bay. It was a heck of a win up alongside the rails there.
Yeah, it was excellent. You know, credit to the team who managed that horse. You know, the Kieran Mars team, obviously Kieran suspended, but Aaron Purcell, you know, David Eustace in particular, who's been with the horse right from the start. People like Brian and Annabelle at Kieran's office, you know, he's been the star of their stable alongside horses like Jamaica and Aloysia for quite some time, and they've always held him in the highest regard. It looked for some time like he was going to be a Coffee of Guineas horse, and then the hard decision was made to reassess his program after a sticky run on an unusual surface in the Golden Rose. And as it transpired, it's worked out great. Mark Zahra gave the horse a very brave ride, and he was a very willing, you know, he was a very willing accomplice in the whole thing, Merchant Navy. He's bred to be a brilliant sprinter. His mother was a fantastic sprinting mare for Chris and Jane Barham, who bred Merchant Navy and are still involved in the ownership. And, you know, as breeders, for Chris and Jane, you think your chance of breeding an elite racehorse might have gone. I mean, they bred Jolie Bay to run second in the Coolmore to Nikita probably 5 years ago from memory. So to get a second bite of the cherry and it be a winning one with Merchant Navy a few years later must be tremendously fulfilling for them.
Yeah, and Fastnet Rock's 31st Group 1 winner came through in the Meyer Classic, won by Shoals. She looks a real star.
She's one of the best bred fillies in the world. It's an amazing pedigree. It's a pedigree, huge portion of which actually grew or was developed and raised at Coolmore. But she's a very high-class filly, as we've all know and come to learn. Very hard for a three-year-old filly to beat her older peers or beat their older peers in the spring, and to do so in the manner that she did. I mean, she was at Global Glamour's girth right throughout the race and put tremendous pressure on that filly, and she eventually cracked and still had enough in reserve to repel some fairly stiff challenges late on. Anthony Friedman's done a fantastic job with her. It's a very brave call for Anthony and his team to have made to tackle older mares at this stage of the season, knowing that they potentially have a lovely filly for the autumn. But they made the right decision, and like, it's a great result for Johnson Munns and Arrowfield who own and bred her. I'm sure they're looking forward in due course to her joining their own broodmare band. But in the meantime, she looks a filly capable of winning more nice races. I mean, you'd have to think that races like the Coolmore Classic or Legacy Stakes or those kind of races are really going to suit her nicely. And typically of the Fasted Rocks, they really enjoy their racing. You know, they're tough and sound, give their all, and she's no different, really. She's another fantastic endorsement of the qualities of the stallion.
Yeah, she sure is. And on that same day, so memorable for you, the High Chaparral legacy lived on through the Derby winner, Ace High.
Yeah, he's been a very high-class horse for some time. David Payne's been at Payne's, or stressed everybody in Sydney that he thinks this is, or he's thought that this was a very good colt. We've really seen the best of him, stepped out of staying trips this spring. You know, he was an impressive winner of the Spring Champion Stakes, and he had a bit of a gap between runs into the Derby, and he had a pretty tricky run through the race, but really he was dominant at the finish, and it's been a great ride for John Cordina, who's been a good patron of Coolmore for a long time, and, you know, is very, very fond of this horse, and with good reason. It's, you know, it's a tough ask for those three-year-olds to run out 2,500 metres at Flemington at this stage of their careers, and he did it with aplomb, and he might be the sort of horse that's capable of bridging the gap to wait for age, whether it's going to be in the autumn or next year as a four-year-old, but he's a very classy sort of horse, very much in the same mould of his stallion or of his sire physically, and John's going to have a lot of fun with him.
And High Chaparral got the Melbourne Cup winner as well in Rekindling.
Yeah, that was quite astonishing, really. You know, he's a Northern Hemisphere three-year-old. I know they've had the race in mind for him for some time, but you know, that speed, you know, that holds true for many of the runners in the race. It takes a lot of planning to get there. And the further they went, the stronger he looked. And reading some of the press post-race, it reads like the intention is the horse might go to the Ascot Gold Cup next year. And, you know, we might see him back in Melbourne in 12 months' time as a defending champion looking to try and win the race again. I mean, it's a huge test of any horse, but particularly a three-year-old. It's a very significant test, so full credit to the horse that he was more than capable of standing up to the task.
And the story of young Joseph O'Brien defeating his father, Aidan.
Well, you know, we're in the midst of a season where Aidan O'Brien has broken the world record for the most number of Group 1 winners in a calendar year. And, you know, the season isn't done with yet. There's, you know, still Group 1 racing in Hong Kong, etc. But for his 24-year-old son to go and do something that his father has yet to do, despite a number of valiant attempts, is a testament to the talent of that young man. He's an incredibly likable fellow, and obviously a very, very capable trainer. He was a very good rider. He really did tremendously well to commit as long as he did to the saddle, given his size. He's a tall chap, and you can imagine how difficult it would have been with his weight, but he's a tremendously talented horseman, as his, you know, as his family heritage would suggest he might be, and I think we're going to be hearing plenty more about him. And the encouraging thing for the marketplace here is that, having had success here, generally speaking, that encourages people to want to participate again. And, you know, year in, year out, we recognise the value of international participation in the big carnival. So hopefully Joseph will be back with the appropriate horses, be it in Sydney or Melbourne, over the next few years, and hopefully regularly from then onward.
That's an excellent point you make there, Sebastian. So Ace High and Rekindling, importantly too, are both colts, so that augurs well for potential futures longer term at stud.
Yeah, look, it's the first thing that anybody turns to or thinks of when a colt wins a nice race. There's a huge volume of new stallions across Australia this year. It's a very competitive marketplace and an ever-evolving one. They both have pretensions to being stallions in due course, but they're owned by sportsmanlike owners. You know, Lloyd and Nick Williams are very sportsmanlike people, as is John Cordina. I'd imagine in the short term their appetite is to enjoy the pleasure of racing their horses before any significant attention is paid to considering stud careers for both of them. I mean, there's nothing to say that should they go on and be as good a horses as they look in due course, that they won't be able to establish place at stud for themselves, but there's plenty of water to go under the bridge yet.
So, Sebastian, the extraordinary success of Coolmore Stud Stallion's progeny on the track at Flemington this week would have to be unprecedented, wouldn't it?
It's unprecedented in my time here, but I'm st- still, I suppose, relatively new to the experience. But it it was staggering to be across, or for it to have occurred across the range of stallions that it did. You know, Choisir won the two-year-old race in good fashion on Cup Day. You know, even Master Craftsman having a nice winner, and that filly running well again in the Oaks on Thursday, Lova Lova. You know, the breadth of the success has really been what's remarkable, and for a variety of different patrons and people. And look, they're the sort of runs of success that, you know, are fundamentally important to our business. I mean, that's what we encourage people to patronise the stallions on the strength of, that their progeny will be there when the whips are cracking in a big race. So to have that fulfilled and in a very significant manner is great for the farm. It's great for everybody here, and we're working hard to ensure it continues to be the case. I mean, we have a host of young stallions that we're hoping go on and emulate the likes of Fast and Rock, Choisir, Piero. So you think, you know, and we're looking at the next generation. We have yearlings by Rubik to offer next year, and Adelaide. And then the following year, it'll be the first of the Pride of Dubai's, Vancouver's, and Nona Nevers for sale. So it's a continually evolving scale, and hopefully we continue to land on the right horses and they can continue to demonstrate their prowess as producers of elite race horses. That's what the business is all about.
Mm. And you're all very focused. There hasn't been too much time to sit basking in the glory at Flemington. You're already back on farm in the Hunter Valley with clients wanting to look at their newly born foals.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year from that point of view. We have Magic Millions yearlings in the barn ready to be prepared, or being prepared for the Magic Millions in January. We have, at this stage, 265 foals on the farm. It's a busy time of the year, as you alluded to, and we enjoy going through plans for stock with patrons and clients and establishing what they'd like to do with those animals longer term, trying to identify appropriate sales or appropriate programs to those horses with a view to achieving the right results. And that's why the success of, in particular, graduates of the farm, horses that have been foaled, raised and developed here is particularly fulfilling, because as much as the lineage of these particular horses is important, there's a huge amount of man-made influence over the whole process as well, and it's a credit to the team we have here that things have been working out so well for so long.
Sebastian, always lovely to catch up with you on Talking Horses. Thanks for joining us during this busy time, and once again, congratulations on the success for Coolmore during Cup Week, when it all really counts.
Pleasure, Joel. Really appreciate it.
That's Coolmore's Sebastian Hutch. They have enjoyed unprecedented success during Melbourne Cup Week at Flemington, winning virtually all of the majors.
Across Victoria, our thoroughbred racing heartland, RSN 927 is Talking Horses.
Welcome back to the program. One of Australia's most decorated equestrian athletes, Andrew Hoy, is in town this week for the Melbourne Cup Carnival at Flemington. Andrew is well known to many of you listeners. He's the only Australian to ever have competed in 7 Olympic Games. He is the winner of 4 Olympic medals, 3 gold and 1 silver. And it's great to have him in Melbourne celebrating the horses this week. And he's on Talking Horses with us this morning. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, very well, thank you, and it's wonderful to be here in Australia.
Yes, it's not unfamiliar territory to you, Flemington, during Cup Week. You do like to come out and visit pretty regularly.
That's right. I have been to at least the last 20 Melbourne Cups and been a guest of the committee, and it's been absolutely wonderful. And this time I have an involvement with off-the-track thoroughbreds, and I brought Algebra back that I've been competing in Europe for the last 3 years at international level, and he is 19 years of age, an ex-racehorse, and we actually have just retired him, and he was part of the Melbourne Cup parade, and then I also presented the race at Flemington, the off-the-track thoroughbred race.
Yes, in your role as an ambassador for the Racing Victoria off-the-track program, it's a terrific concept, isn't it?
It really is, and without doubt, like there's, I've had three horses that I've taken to Olympic Games that have all been off the track, and there is no doubt. It looks, the horses don't have to be of international level and go on to the international sports scene. There are many horses that go into polo or into polo cross, also into the pony club area. They just, and other horses have become just a riding horse for people, and also they go into the as police horses, and then also the riding for the disabled have horses.
It's wonderful to see these ex-race horses go on into various pursuits and in some cases go to the top level of equestrian sport. What are some of the key attributes in the thoroughbred that you most admire and look for, Andrew?
Look, the one thing that would be the standalone thing is the fact that they're a thoroughbred and they can just run without, I should say, run a little more easily than some of the European breeds, such as the warm bloods. The thing is, when you take a horse from the racetrack, there is muscle memory that horse is automatically set up, and so it's just going to take time to retrain that muscle memory. Like Algebra was a horse that just had the most wonderful temperament and also a wonderful desire for competition. He just absolutely loved it and just incredibly sound. One of the soundest horses in my stable. The only time that the vet came to look at the horse was once when he had a cold and the other time for a flu vaccination.
Mm. And testament to that, Andrew, is his longevity as a performance horse. How many seasons did you have him in England for?
I had him for three seasons. Natalie Blundell from Harden was the one that I have to say that really started the horse off and brought him to international level, and where he was on teams for and training squads for World Championships and Olympic Games. And she did an absolutely wonderful job with Algebra.
And he's back in Australia safely now. Is he going to retire at his owner John Glenn's property, or what is the plan for him now?
Yes, that is correct. John Glenn and Julia McLean, they own Algebra, and they're at Yass, and so he will return to their beautiful property in Yass. And I only received a photograph yesterday of Algebra galloping down the field, down the paddock, and so it was just wonderful to see that he's out enjoying this warmer weather and not the cold of England.
Which you're no doubt quite pleased to have escaped as well after another big season of riding there. How did you sum up the season and the success that you had?
Look, I had some wonderful moments this year. I rode a horse called the Blue Frontier at Burleigh, which was his last competition. The owner, who was actually from the racing industry, and I felt that it was time to retire the Blue Frontier, and so he's now gone into the hunting field as a huntmaster's horse in England. So that's wonderful. And then I've got some very, very nice young stock, young horses coming through. I have an 8-year-old called Vasily de la Sos, and he's just got amazing performance up until now, and he's a 3-star level. And this next year I will have 6 horses running at 3-star level in Europe.
Mm. And it's always challenging just for our racing audience to get the right horse for that level of eventing competition, isn't it?
It is. It takes time, and it takes a good program to get the horse through. Like for me to run at top level on the world scene, whether it be in Europe or whether it be in Australia, it's the same as a trainer trying to, an owner trying to get a horse for the Melbourne Cup and the spring racing carnival, say, to either win the Oaks or win the Melbourne Cup. And, like, you just need a good program, you need good horsepower, and you need things just to go the right way for you. But it's just extraordinary how the top trainers always seem to have a horse in the Melbourne Cup because they've obviously got a good program.
Mm. And you yourself, as a rider, to go to that next level on the international stage, although you've been competing on it since 1978 with your first international championship in Kentucky. But, Andrew, you relocated to the UK 20 years ago. Was that essential for your development?
Look, that was one of the last things that I wanted to do was leave Australia and go to Europe. But it was after... the Australian eventing team had success in Barcelona, where we won a gold medal. I really felt then, because I was farming in Culcairn and also riding the horses, I was just trying to take too much on, and I felt that I could, if I was to stay in the equine industry, I needed to go where the hub of the sport was and where all the competition is. And at that point in time, it was the United Kingdom, and so subsequently, I moved and decided to base in the United Kingdom. There is no doubt that being in Europe, the number of competitions that you compete at and you can compete at is just immense. I will go to Rome, which is 2,500 kilometres for me from England, and so for me to drive there, it's very doable. They have good competitions there. They have good competitions in Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, and Germany, and also in Poland, there are some wonderful events in Poland as well as in Ireland, and obviously the United Kingdom has so many events. In England, in the United Kingdom alone, in 1 year, there are 1.2 million jumping efforts of cross-country fences in the United Kingdom, so that just gives a little bit of an idea as to how big the eventing scene is.
You must have had some extraordinary experiences over that 20-year period, Andrew.
Yes, good and low. So it's like any athlete and any sporting person, you definitely have your high moments and you have your low moments. And I said to the owners of the horse won the race for the grey horses yesterday, and off the track program, enjoy the moment, because I said with horses you have definite highs and definite lows, but it's the same in business, it's the same in any industry. And so I would say the thing that I appreciate and value the most is the opportunity that the equine industry have given me, and that is to travel because of the horses. And I've been just to wonderful places and met wonderful, wonderful people, and friendships have developed from that. And that's something that the horses have done. And like as you've said, and other people have said to me, I've had a wonderful time with the horses, and I definitely have. But there is not one horse in my stable that knows what I've done with my life. Therefore, they only ever treat me the way I treat them.
Mm. Andrew, what's your favourite Olympic moment?
Look, I've had so many, but the one favourite one would have been to win gold in Sydney, win the eventing team competition in front of the home crowd. Even someone said to me yesterday at the races that they've spoken with athletes, and athletes have said that Sydney is their greatest Olympics and their favourite Olympics. And I said, well, it is for me as well. It was an Olympics where the sport brought the best out of the people, out of the Australian people, and out of the country. And that's something that was very special about Sydney, and also the fact that I won individual silver medal in the individual competition. And so for me to get two medals from the one Olympics in front of the home crowd. This was undoubtedly the highlight of my sporting career, albeit it's now 17 years ago.
Time flies, doesn't it? And only around the corner almost is Tokyo 2020 and, of course, the World Equestrian Games at Tryon in the US next year. So no doubt, Andrew, they are prime targets for you to now aim for.
Yes, they are. And as I said earlier, I think I've got a wonderful team of young horses coming through. So I think it's something that I'm very much directing my focus to. The sport has changed immensely over the years that I've been involved. The care of the horses is just absolutely paramount and one of the most important things for me, the welfare of the horse. And also what we can now do and find out about the horse and the well-being of the horse prior to competition and maintaining the welfare of the horse throughout the competition, that has improved enormously as well from when I first rode World Championships in 1978 in Kentucky in America. It's the sport and the welfare and everything has moved forward. And for anyone that's involved in the sport, whether it be racing, whether it be eventing, the care and the love of the horse is just so important.
Mm. And you face similar challenges to what high-level jockeys do. It's competitive. It's tough to get the right horses and the right owners to back you, isn't it?
Yes, it's... Look, the horses are always there. It's just making sure that you've got the right training program. The support of the owners and the support of my owners has just been absolutely wonderful over the years. It's I've got owners that are here in Australia. I've got owners that are in the United States. I've got British owners. I've got Swiss owners. And so they're from all around the world. And interestingly, quite often they've had an involvement in the racing industry. But it's something that is just so important, and it's important that the owners enjoy the moment as well. And so I'd say for anyone that's coming into the sport and wanting to get owners and have the sport as their being their career and their livelihood, you just have to make sure that you think of not just yourself and the horse, but also what the owners get from the sport as well.
Andrew, you've been front and centre during Melbourne Cup Week at Flemington. Have you managed to back a winner along the way?
The only winner that I've had is that I'm leaving with the same amount of money that I started with because I didn't put any money on any horses. So
that's smart.
My betting career has been not successful, and it's something that I would never try and make a living from.
Is there a highlight moment on the racetrack that you witnessed? What did you think of the Melbourne Cup outcome with young Joseph O'Brien becoming the youngest trainer ever to win the race?
Yes, look, that is just extraordinary. And I've been to Coolmore and had an involvement with Coolmore, of which Bally Doyle, where Joseph grew up, was just right alongside. And like that's a very special moment because there have been trainers for years trying to produce a horse to win the Melbourne Cup, and what Joseph has been able to do was just extraordinary. And also what Lloyd Williams has been able to do with having the top three place gettings in the Melbourne Cup is something that an owner would ever dream of doing.
Yeah, it is incredible. And on a personal note, recently, Andrew, you became a father for the first time.
Yes, I have my wife, Stephanie, here in Australia with me, and also our 14-week-old baby girl, Philippa. And Philippa means horse friend and horse lover, so it's been absolutely one of the most special moments of my life to actually have a child. And people have said to me before the birth of Philippa, Andrew, this is going to be one of the most special moments of your life. And I'm thinking, well, I've had some fairly special moments, and I don't know what it's like to have a child because I've never had a child. But I would say I've received some more congratulations, and it was also recognized in the committee room yesterday during AICS Day by the chairman and Amanda Elliott, saying that she and the committee were congratulating Stephanie and myself on the birth of our baby daughter, Philippa. So this is something that was very, very special as well. And you have to experience having a child to know the feeling.
And what are the odds that she'll one day be pretty handy in the saddle?
Yes, look, I think whatever Steffi and I feel, whatever Philippa would like to do with her life is important. I feel all that we can teach her is respect and values, and be supportive to her. And if she wants to go into the equestrian industry, that could be very likely. Because if Gay Waterhouse was only speaking in the at the committee room yesterday, saying that was she destined to be a trainer, and she said her father told her not to become a trainer. But she said, when you sit there at breakfast and you hear your dad on the telephone talking about the horses all the time, and you hear your dad talking to other trainers and jockeys and people who are involved in the racing industry, she said you just automatically gain knowledge without realizing that you're gaining knowledge. And I think this is obviously what's going to happen with Philippa. As she becomes old enough to understand things, she will start to pick up things that I'm saying, and also what Stephanie does as well, the pick up the business side of the industry.
Mm. Andrew, how much longer are you in Australia before you head back to the UK?
I'm heading back to the UK on the 22nd. Stephanie and Philippa and myself are all heading back to the UK then. And in the meantime, I've got some clinics in Toowoomba to finalise the celebration with John Glenn and Julia McLean with Algebra's retirement at their property at Yass, and then clinics at Silver Hills and also Hawkesbury.
Lovely to have you home, and thanks for taking the time to join us on Talking Horses, Andrew.
It's an absolute joy to be here in Australia and to be part of your program as well.
That's Andrew Hoy, an Australian equestrian legend, visiting home for Cup Week at Flemington. Wonderful to have him as a special guest on the program this morning. It was the final day at Flemington yesterday, and we opened the program with the Group 3 Mara Long Plate over 1,000 metres. The winner was the Tony McAvoy-trained Run Nan, a two-year-old colt by McVie, out of a perfectly ready mare, Ranine, not offered at the yearling sales. The next plate type race on the program was the Group 3 Queen Elizabeth Stakes over 2,600 metres, won by the very promising stayer Venga Mask, a six-year-old gelding by Munson out of the Lea Fan mare Venetian Beauty, not offered at the yearling sales, and import Venga Mask, and perhaps we'll see this horse in the Melbourne Cup next year. The sixth event on the program was the Matriarch Stakes, a Group 2 over 2,000 metres, won by the Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott-trained Savopinski, a four-year-old mare by Savabil out of a Pins mare, Swarovski. It was sold through the New Zealand Bloodstock Select Yearling Sale in 2015 for $70,000 and is a relation to the winner Multifacets. The Group 1 Darley Classic over 1,200 metres, and Red Zell continued his dominant form. A five-year-old gelding by Snitzel out of a Rubiton mare, Mill Rich, sold at the 2014 Magic Millions Gold Coast Yearling Sale for $120,000. The Group 1 Emirates Stakes over 2,000 metres, won by Darren Weir's Tozen Standam, a Japanese import. He's a seven-year-old horse by Deep Impact, out of an N-Suite mare, Admire Kira Miki. Kentucky Breeze was the winner of the listed Emirates Airline Handicap over 1,400 metres, trained by Levi Kavanagh, a three-year-old gelding by Piero, out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Tiny Girl. Sold through the 2016 English Premier Yearling Sale, for $105,000. Kentucky Breeze is a relation to winners Brother-in-Arms, DB9, Moschino and Tani Dancer. And that's a look back at the final day at Flemington yesterday. Terrific day of racing to end what has been another wonderful week. Welcome back to the program. Red Zell, the Everest winner, continued on his winning ways yesterday at Flemington with a Group 1 win in the Darley Classic. And Michael Ward from Triple Crown joins us this morning. He spoke to us, of course, after the Everest win. And now, Michael, you're rejoining us after another major race win. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Jay. Yeah, I'm pleased to be doing so. It was amazing to win the Everest, 4 weeks ago, and now to frank that form and back it up again in the Darley Classic yesterday is amazing.
So with the Everest set to rise to $13 million next year and $15 million by 2020, Red Zell has already earned close to $8 million from a record of 11 wins, 4 seconds and a third from only 21 starts.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's crazy to think he's basically about 150,000 off Black Caviar's career earnings. So I think it's taken him to eight, you know, in history's highest earners in racing. So it's unbelievable money that's on offer these days, and who knows what he'll end up with by the end of his career.
And that win yesterday was his sixth consecutive win. He is in absolutely scintillating form.
He is. He's in white hot form. You know, of his last 9 runs, he's won 7 of them, and the other two, he finished second by 0.1 of a length and 0.2 of a length. So, as you know, at this level, it's very hard to win, let alone, you know, get a picket fence put together. So, you know, he is in terrific form and you know, fingers crossed to continue into next year.
It was a dominant win again yesterday, wasn't it?
It was, and that's the exciting thing about the horse, is he just continues to improve every time he steps out on the race course. And I think he did that again yesterday. You know, he was a sitting shot there yesterday, did all the work himself. You know, he did rattle off some good sectionals early. Kerem was then able to get a little bit of a breather mid-race, and, you know, it looked, you know, from the overhead camera there, you saw that it looked like the challenges were starting to come at him, but you know, as soon as they got within probably half a length or so, he just kicked again and he was very strong through the line.
It's interesting reading some of the post-race comments, Michael, and Kieran McAvoy, his regular rider, described him as an unassuming horse and that he was surprised where he's got to.
Yeah, well, I think the difference is, he won his debut by 3 lengths, so we knew he had a very good horse and he had been showing a fair bit at home in trials. But in his subsequent few runs there, he probably underperformed, to be fair. And it was a matter of trying to work him out. And that's what Peter and Paul did. They worked out his best racing pattern. And it was only after a day, I think Hugh Bowman was on board and he just said, look, I'm going to throw caution to the wind. I know this horse has got it, but he's just not showing it on race day. And he went straight to the lead and, you know, from that day, he's never looked back. So I think, you know, he probably came from more humble beginnings, but the levels he's reaching now is unbelievable.
Michael, he's only 5 years old. There's still so much ahead of him.
That's true. Yeah, he's very young, isn't he? And, you know, for a girl, he should definitely have his best years in front of him. So, you know, the next couple of years in particular, you know, you shudder to think, you know, where you may end up. We certainly had, after yesterday's race, we had the guys from Royal Ascot there talking to us and trying to encourage us to make a move over there, you know, mid-next year. And there's so many options around. I mean, you've got the Magic Millions race, which is a graduate of the Magic Millions sale, which is $1 million there in mid-January. You've got the Lightning, of course, and you know, Newmarket Handicap, and $2.5 million TJ Smith in the autumn. And of course, the Everest again, as you said, the prize money's going up. It's astronomical what's on offer for owners these days.
You mentioned Royal Ascot courting to get the horse there potentially next year. Is that something that you will seriously consider?
Yeah, we definitely will. It's obviously, it'd be a great opportunity. Just life experience, and that's what it's about, getting involved in racehorse ownership, is just getting some life experiences. You know, they're not always as grand as that, of course, but getting those life experiences with fellow owners and, you know, going over to England would certainly take it to another level again. So it will be high on the agenda for consideration, but likewise, as I said, we've got some superb races in Australia and, you know, we're just as keen to go for them as well.
That $120,000 you spent at the Magic Millions a few years ago, back in 2014, was money well spent, wasn't it, as it turns out?
Yeah, as it turns out, it's looking cheap, isn't it? But, it's been a great return on investment, and I'm just so pleased for everybody involved in the horse, and it's obviously a big team that's involved, the owners, the trainers and, you know, stable staff, you know, Karen, everybody that's involved. He's brought a lot of joy to a lot of people's lives.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Horses. Enjoy the ride.
Thanks very much, Jo. Certainly will. Cheers.
That's Michael Ward from Triple Crown Syndications, with Red Zell continuing on his winning ways yesterday in the Darley Classic. And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Special thanks to our guest this morning, equestrian legend Andrew Hoy, Cornwall Stud Sebastian Hutch, and Triple Crown Syndications' Michael Ward. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.